Hello to everybody, and welcome to the initial episode of Hot Topics, a fire and EMS service-related podcast. The primary scope of the Hot Topics podcast is to share fire and EMS experience from both career working personnel and also from retired career personnel. And also there will be a really good mix of call personnel that will be in to help us as we move forward through the podcast. The podcast will be once a month at the beginning of the month. One thing I want to be upfront with, it's not the intent of this podcast to critique or Monday morning quarterback any calls made by incident commander or IC on any calls here. We're not here to do that, have questions come in or do that at all. This just is to share experiences relative to the fire and EMS service. As a quick background on me, I'm married to my wife, Marie, who is also a teacher, and I have four sons, Joe, Sean, Matthew, and Kyle. Two dogs, one a four-year-old shepherd, Ziva, and a three-year-old white golden named Luna. My background is 44 years of service with the Town of Hopkinton Fire Department, and then I'm just up shy of 50 years with two other departments. After I retired in January of 2016, I got the phone rang three times, and two I followed through on them. One was the town of Upton. Went there at the end of 16 from September to end of the year, December. And then in 2019, just as the COVID started, the phone rang and was asked for to help the town of Berlin in the for 2 or 3 months, and it ended up to be just shy of 4 years. So that was an unbelievable experience. A kind of a smaller community, but a very energetic, a lot going on in it. And it was different in many operationally, especially the amount of personnel that you could draw on and the way the town was set up with no municipal water. It was a different ball game up there. But I've been very, very blessed to in Hopkinton for the 44 years. I got 16 of those years was assigned primarily to the Fire Prevention Bureau. And being a small combination department, you respond to all the calls. If I was out doing a smoke detector inspection or an occupancy or something, I would respond instantly to any calls that needed the manpower to go on them. So you were always, weren't just in the office or out doing inspection. You still had that operational capability, which was, I really, really enjoyed. And the same with the other two places. It was full. You know, you got involved in even the minor medicals in Berlin. There was only three of us on duty at a time at the most during the day when I was there. So it was like some days we'd have four if the inspector was in. So interesting. But we'll go into that in some further down the road. Some on some of our other episodes, we're going to like look at in depth into what that department was like when the operational lieutenant comes down from there and will visit with us on one of the shows. Okay, and so that's kind of like where I am. I was blessed in Hopkinton also to participate in hazmat. When the hazmat teams at the state started, we had a district team up and running with the required training. And when they initiated the state hazmat team program across the entire state, they took our District 14 team and assimilated it into that. And you'll see some members that will be here. Future broadcasts will go into great detail about that. I was also assigned to the regional dive team and also the regional technical rescue team. And one of the other offshoots that was really, I really look forward to the challenge every year was drafting the incident action plan for that, which I did for 21 years, for the Boston Marathon, which was held every April. So that training for that, usually training and planning started in September, October, and went right up to when the event was held the day in April. So it's like got a lot of contacts from that, got a lot of really good training out of that. But again, down the road, we'll go into great detail on that. In our second episode, Chief Doherty will be into, we'll get into the nitty gritty of the marathon. But today, what I wanted to talk about is something that I have seen in my travels all across the country, and all, especially in our area here in New England, it is the generational aspect of community service through the fire department and other important community jobs. Okay, I'm blessed to be a third generation firefighter in the town of Hopkinton. Had a grandfather who was a captain, a call captain, all the way back into the 40s. And then my father came along and married into the family, and he became a firefighter. Each of them had over 30 to 40 years experience as a call firefighter. And I was blessed to work with two of my brothers, Fran and Boo, who are career firefighters with me. And also, I have five cousins and two uncles and some great uncles who are also call firefighters in Hopkinton. So there was some interesting talk at the table around fire department discussions for many, many years. And it's like, and while we're on the service to the community, my guest today is my oldest son, Joe. Joe, just a year ago, almost a year ago, was elected to the Board of Selectmen in the town of Hopkinton at the age of 36. I know there's been one younger Board of Selectmen member that I can remember that I, in my time here, but I want to invite Joe on and welcome Joe. And Joe, thanks for taking time from your busy schedule to show up today.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be here. Really excited to be on the initial podcast.
Yeah.
Probably a good idea. Get the kinks out with me. You can blame it on a poor guest later on if it doesn't go well. But no, excited to.
Yeah. And Joe, when he was off to college down in New York at Pace, he came back one time. And one of the things that sticks in my mind is we had a call for a sledding accident at the state park at the dam. For all the people who know that, at the Hopkinton State Park, it was geographically in Ashland, but there's a dual response to that. And we went in there after a 2-foot snowstorm, and we had a call for an injury, and we went in there, and Joe said, "Dad, can I go with you?" I said, "Yep." And he turned to his mom and said, "I'm going with Dad, saving some lives." But we went down there, and it was as far from the paved road as you could get where the accident happened. We could see the people probably 200 plus yards up at the base of the dam on the north side. And I turned to Joe and I said to the medics, I said, "Give me your heaviest bag." I said, "Joe, I need a straight line from the parking lot here right to those people there." And Joe broke trail for us that morning or afternoon, whatever it was, early afternoon. Joe broke trail right straight over carrying the heaviest bag. I think he ran the whole way and got us efficiently to that spot. And that's something that it made me smile when I saw him do that. And I said, let's go follow him. He's got the trail breaker. So it's like, but Joe, like I had said, recently ran for being a fourth generation in Hopkinton doing this to the community service, ran for the Board of Selectmen. And Joe, could you just tell me some of the things, some of the surprises that you had in your initiation to the public service type to the town?
Yeah, I think the whole thing was turned out to be a surprise in a lot of ways, right? It was uncharted territory for me, right? I haven't had the opportunity to be involved in the town, you know, at any official capacity. And then, of course, getting into something like this, you know, a lot of people consider it, you know, politics. I'm not one of those people. I'm here to speak on this because I truly believed it's, you know, community service, public service. And, you know, that's the reason I got involved. I saw some things in town over the last year or two that, you know, there was kind of a lack of leadership from our previous select board. And it just didn't instill a lot of confidence in the community. You know, more and more people were complaining about things. So, you know, it got to the point where I found myself complaining about things. And, you know, if I'm complaining, then it's either time to do something or, you know, shut up about it.
Yep.
And so I think the whole thing was kind of eye-opening, right? You know, especially, you know, the initial onset of, because again, even though I don't consider it politics, you do have to campaign, right? It was, you know, a contested election. I shouldn't say contested, a competitive election. So just going through that process was very interesting. You know, how do we start it? You know, and I think you were obviously a big part of that and how we got like the message out through our connections. I would say we really went the grassroots style with the campaigning, which I think fits, you know, fits our family. It fits Hopkinton as well. So I think that whole process was definitely a bit of a surprise. From there, it's, you know, I like to say it really hasn't been a surprise. You know, I knew I spent a lot of time up front talking to, you know, previous members of the select board, got their opinions on, you know, what the job would entail, you know, from a time commitment, from, you know, a community outreach standpoint. So, you know, thankfully I would say I really haven't been surprised in a while because everything's kind of been what I expected, you know, people reaching out. And I enjoy that part of it, right? You know, it's, you want to see the community invested in the town and taking interest and asking questions. And, you know, it's one of those positions where, you know, not everyone's going to agree with decisions that get made. And that's okay. People got to get back to, you know, disagreeing on things and being okay with it, and moving forward and moving the town forward. But people should never stop asking questions or airing their opinions. And, you know, so there's been a lot of outreach from residents, you know, whether it's through email or showing up at our meetings to talk. So I would call those pleasant surprises.
Yeah. Now, how long is the commitment to the board?
It's a three-year term.
Three-year term. Almost a year. So you're almost a year, a third through.
Yeah. So yeah. I think it was just around this time last year that I pulled papers to run for it and started the whole campaigning process. So it's, and the year's flown by, right? It's, I think things are a little bit quieter now. I think my colleague Brian Herr describes it well. There's been a little less news in Hopkinton recently, which is a good thing. Yeah. You know, it's if the select board is not drawing attention to themselves, you know, it's a positive. So, yeah, it's a 3-year term, and I feel like, you know, hopefully if the town wants me back, it probably won't be my only term.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And it makes me smile when I heard you say the term grassroots, because when Joe was running, and I was assisting in any way that I could, but mostly with putting his signs up, and we had people actually come up to the front door of the house and knock on the front door and saying, "Oh, how do I get one of Joe's signs to put in my yard?" You know what I mean? And I was happy with Joe that, and I told him, I said, "If you get half the support I got from the community when I was fire chief, you'll do really well." And I think that Joe, if I remember, got the most votes. So it's of the four great candidates, it was four really good candidates, and they the community only had to choose two. They could choose two to move forward onto the board. So they were all great candidates, and it's like it was good to see Joe get the most in the community, stand up and support Joe. So how is your running for the Board of Selectmen, how has that affected your interaction with people? I think that you always had a strong interaction with people, a positive interaction with people. I know you run on your sales team, you do that, but it's like, has that been a positive part of your participation on the Board of Selectmen?
Yeah, I think it's been positive all around, right? It's, you know, obviously I've always felt connected to the town of Hopkinton. Yeah. And this has just kind of intensified that, you know, I wouldn't even say over the last year, in the first couple months of running for it, the amount of outreach and support for me running, you know, had me introduced to so many more people that you've probably known for years. I know confidently that you did know that a lot of them for years, but it was people that just maybe I ran into them once or twice, but never really had a chance to connect with or get to know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's been the most enjoyable aspect of it, is just that, you know, deeper connection to the town, knowing, you know, more people, because there are a lot of people in this town that care about Hopkinton, which, you know, as long as we have that, Hopkinton will keep moving forward and keep growing. And it's just been great to be a part of that even more. And then I think, like, as you alluded to, you know, for me, like this is kind of, again, it's public service, community service for me. You know, I'm very fortunate. I have a great job, you know, I should say a great career. I love what I do. I plan to do it for a very long time. But I do think this has also, you know, provided me insights into, you know, my own development in my professional career, right? You know, again, going back to the idea of, you know, a lot of the decisions and things that we vote on the select board, you know, you know ahead of time. You know, if you're lucky, 60% of people will agree with you, but there's always that 40% that won't. And I think that's, you know, someone in my career, you know, trying to grow as a leader, you know, you have to get used to making decisions that are in the best interest of, you know, the common good, or in this case, the town. Because, you know, frankly, in my line of work, I haven't had to be put in that position too often. So it's been a great, you know, addition to my professional development to be able to do those things and do them in a, you know, public manner where everything I say and am thinking about, you know, is in front of people and it's on TV and it's recorded. So it's been good.
Yeah. And another thing I thought of while Joe was talking, when we talked about helping him with signs, was, and it made me smile, my heart glow a little bit, was a tenant of a building on Grove Street approached us to have signs. He talked to his landlord, and the landlord had two properties, and one was on Main Street. And the one on Main Street, and I shared this with Joe, it was important to me, is it was where his great-great-grandmother came after the Great War in Europe in 1918 or 1919. They moved here with my grandmother, one of nine siblings, and they moved into the house behind the Muffin House on Main Street now. And they lived there for years. That's where we watched all the Horribles parades from the front yard there. We were in a bunch of them as kids. And but when the landlord said, oh, the chief needs to put up some signs, have him put them up on my property, not an issue. And one of them was a family, it's out of the family now, the property, but for many, many years they raised, and it was great discussions there with my great uncles, and listening to them over the years. They, again, some of them were called firefighters and also Second World War veterans, and my grandmother's brothers. So it was like, that made me smile when I said, oh, the two perfect places in town. That one's the best one. And that was my favorite place of putting up a sign.
Yep. I don't think you can get better real estate for a sign than that.
No. Now, looking back over the many years that I know that one of the rules we had at our house, that the only time I couldn't leave to go on a fire call was during a birthday. You know what I mean? That was a rule was set early when Joe was really young and followed through with all the boys. But it's like, what are some of your memories of the fire department experience that you were with me from a young age? You and especially Sean, you and I and Sean would go to the station almost every weekend.
Yeah, I just felt like I was always in the firehouse, right? Yeah. You know, for whatever reasons, if it was stopping by for a few minutes. And it was always just kind of a part of our lives, right? And as you alluded to, you know, often you'd get called away for, you know, medical or something, and you'd have to leave. And, you know, it never felt like you were gone. I can tell you that from that standpoint, as far as I can remember, you know, it was just kind of, hey, you know, Dad was out, you know, helping people, right? Yeah. It was that simple. And so there was, you know, nothing there. You know, I think at the time, you know, I remember, you know, for those years we had Fran live in, what, three houses up.
Yeah.
You know, for certain calls, you'd see, especially if it was that night, look out the window, see, you know, your truck go out, see Fran's truck, you know, right behind you pulling out the driveway, a couple houses up. So you knew something was going on. But I think it was like a positive thing to grow up around that environment and to have a family that, you know, supported the town and the people of this town. So I've always, you know, envied that dedication to helping others.
Yep. And that's what one of the things that drove me to talk about it on the first day here of the podcast was there's so many families and so many communities across the country where it's multi-generational where they do this. And I thought it was a good way to kind of like break the ice. The other thing that I want to talk about is the how the fire department has changed over the years a little bit. So when we first started and when they were young, it was mostly, it was a combination apartment, mostly with call people. When I went on the shift, when I first started in 1978, as a firefighter, EMT, was I was on the shift by myself, and at night at 2 o'clock in the morning when you had a medical, you had to wait for someone to come in from off duty or a call person before you could respond out of the station. And that's an important part that formed that foundation for what I had to build off of. And when we talk about the multi-generational, there's another thing I think of. When we were young, we grew up only two doors from the firehouse to the east. People who have been in town a little while will remember that house was involved with a very tragic gas explosion where we lost two young girls, I think 2 and 4, in that. And when we were growing up in that house, the when you talk about the generational aspect, is it was only a call fire department at the time when we were growing up. And if the fire phone, we had in our house two objects that were related to the firehouse. One was a fire phone that it, with a little white thing on it that you picked up to talk. You couldn't dial out on it. It was the old style with a rotary, but the rotary was taken off. And my mother would answer that if it rang so many times during the day and night when no one else got it. And if it was anything serious, in the closet was a switch that you could pull down and it would activate the horn on the fire department's roof to recall people into the station for a medical or a fire call or something like that. So it was like ingrained early that, you know, that all fed into that public community service type thing, into the blood early, to have those things there. And that drove a lot. And when there was calls, you'd see my father run up, and I was able to follow him to the edge of the fire yard. But I had to stop at the old flagpole there and watch. And then get on the apparatus and go out. And that was kind of like my ingraining to be there someday to do that same thing. And then I went in there as a call firefighter at 15 and a half while still in high school, probationary volunteer call firefighter. And then in 76 I got my EMT. In 78 I went to the fire academy after the blizzard of 78. I had worked for the town doing snow removal and then moved to an opening at the Mass Fire Academy, and I went there. Got my initial recruit training up there. Chief Stewart sent me there, and I was blessed to have really good leadership with Chief Stewart. Early on was his brother Dick, who was the deputy, and Bobby Bartlett was the captain. Ricky McMillan was a lieutenant, and those are the people that led us. And as we move forward, there'll be more about them. But they initiated us to be the first generation to wear the self-contained breathing apparatus, the SCBA. And before that, I can remember my father and even some of the guys, it would be sucking smoke in a building and you could hear them hacking away, and would have the packs on and be young, but be able to make sure they were okay, then go by them and work at a scene because we had that protection on. And it's like, it was critical to grasp that technology. And we'll give that those changes.
Very different times.
Yeah, they were like the original smoke eaters, and they just hacked it, and it was like, to me, it didn't make any sense, and made huge sense to me to learn how to wear this SCBA and be safe. And but another thing I quick wanted to share about Joe is his community service time is also challenging because he has a beautiful wife, Caroline, and two little girls, Ava and Natalie, that are very fond of Joe. And it's like, and so he does that balance to make it work. And it's like, I give him a lot of credit, and it makes me smile a lot. I know he's busy at both, very, and between that and his work. And so, but I was glad that he did that. I get a lot of positive feedback from the community on Joe's work, and It's funny, even three people come up to me after his first town meeting and said, I shut my eyes in the seat, I could hear you talking, and it's Joe. So it's like, you know, it sounded just like I did when I used to have to go up there when I was chief to do my things for capital and budgets and things like that at the annual town meeting, which is something I always look forward to because I got such great support from the community.
Yeah. No, it's been great. It's certainly juggling act at times, yeah. But it was
understatement.
It was the right time to get involved, and I enjoy it. It's, you know, again, for me, the community service, it's you know, a fraction of what you guys, you know, in the fire department and all the first responders do for this town, you know, for your careers. So I'm just trying to give back in a little ways. But, you know, from your standpoint, again, I know community service has always been important to you. What have been some of your favorite things around community service that you've got to do over the years that stand out?
Good question, Joe. I think some of the ones that hit home the most is the public ed I did for many years. 5 minutes a week, we invited kindergarten when they were at the center school down on Ash Street, and they walked to the firehouse. Each of the classes, we took two or three at a time, and we did a safety talk. We talked about using 911 and how to react to smoke detectors and how to crawl into smoke. And then we did a tour of the building, and we did it so early there. My first golden was there when I was on duty, and we did it early, and we'd ask always, only thing we asked was, when you go back, just draw us a picture of what you thought about. So we had a golden that would walk through the whole building. His name was Brandy. Would walk through the whole building while we did the tour, the kitchen, the apparatus floor, after we did a safety talk. I bet you 3/4 of them had a picture of a yellow dog when they wrote that, and we saved them for years. We finally got rid of them when I retired, but we saved them, and they had a picture of the firehouse with a yellow dog on the floor. So that was really good. And just being able to, like, interact with the community as a father of four boys, they played a lot of sports. I think they all played football, basketball, lacrosse when they got older in high school, so it was fun to watch then. But I think another community connection I had that made my job easier in getting support from the community is coached over 50 youth sports teams with the boys. We added up one time, and sometimes I was blessed to have two baseball teams in one season, you know, with a little age difference in the boys. But tried the lacrosse, never played it, but tried it, basketball and football. It was very nice. I met a ton of good people in the community that I still know to this day doing that. So it's like, again, that to me it goes on that community service list because you're connected and you help out when you can and take those teams when the kids need a coach and help out in whatever capacity you need.
Yeah, nope, that's definitely the fun thing. I'm just getting into that this spring. Yeah. I'll have the kindergarten girls, little laxers.
Yeah.
So all the kindergartners. You know, we're going to, I think we start off in late March or something, or maybe early April. But so I'm excited to get involved in that a little bit.
Yep. No, we had a good talk today. Thank you for coming in, Joe, with your busy schedule. And I want to thank everyone for when they get to see this. It's my first one. I feel like I'm a little like mechanical up here. I got to get into the flow of things a little bit. And one thing I'd like to do is the people who hear this, I've established an email with HCAM. It's hottopics@hcam.tv. And if you have questions about what we talked about or any fire and EMS-related questions in the community here or just general questions, feel free to send them to that email address. It's hottopics@hcam, hcam.tv. And I'll answer them at the end of each of my shows moving forward. As we have questions, I'll answer them as a closing part of the episode. So I'd like to thank everybody. I want to thank Joe for taking time for your schedule, showing up here. I'd like to thank the HCAM personnel, Jim Cousins, who's the producer of the show. Joe's younger brother, Matt, is the assistant producer. He works here. And also Mikey Tarosian, who was a call man in Hopkinton for many, many years in the production side of the show here today. But thank you very much.